Excellent. All right, everyone, welcome to our Child Care Provider Licensing Committee meeting. The date is March 14th, 2024, and the time is about 9:30 a.m. We're going to go ahead and do a committee roll call. If you want to unmute yourself and tell us what position you are representing on this committee, and if you're standing in for someone, just go ahead and mention that you're standing in for someone. So we will go ahead and start. I'm just going to go down our list. Is there anyone here for Jamie Bitten? Okay. I'm Jody. Go ahead.
Ariel Baker was supposed to fill in for her, so I will text her.
Okay. That's what I thought. Okay. Perfect. Well, I'm Jody Zabriskie. I'm the chair for our State Board of Licensing Committee. And let's go down to Tammy Thomas.
I'm Becca. I'm standing in for Tammy today.
Thank you, Becca. Holly Kingston.
I'm Holly Kingston. I'm a representative family child care provider here on the Licensing Advisory Board.
Thank you. Astrid.
I'm Astrid Arias, and I am a family child care provider.
Thank you, Astrid. Mindy.
I'm Mindy Brown, and I am sitting for the residential certificate.
Thank you, Mindy. Bree?
I'm Bree Murphy, child care development expert for the child care licensing committee.
Thank you, Bree. Alana?
Alana Brickley, pediatrician with the University of Utah. I do have a sick kid at home, so I'll be listening the whole time, but my video might be in and out. Apologies ahead of time.
That's okay. Thank you, Alana. Matt?
Hi, I'm Matt Wallace. I'm a licensed architect in the state of Utah.
Thank you, Matt. Monica?
I'm Monica Gailey, and I'm on this board as a parent of an enrolled child.
Thank you, Monica. And Marissa?
I'm Marissa Bernards. I'm also a parent of a child in residential daycare.
Thank you, Marissa. And we have one vacant spot for another pediatrician or a doctor. So we will go ahead and proceed with our meeting. The minutes were approved through email on January 11th meeting. So we will go ahead and proceed with our agenda. Kim, if you will scroll down for me. I don't have it pulled up on my other screen. I apologize. Healthcare provider, there is a link on the agenda for anyone that is interested. They can click the link and they can go ahead and apply for that position. We are going to go ahead and have some agency reports, and we're going to start with child care licensing. And I apologize, Simone, I do not know, and we did not put that on there, who is going to be reporting with us today. So will that be you or will that be someone else?
It'll be me today. Good morning, everyone. So I want to take advantage of this and thank every member of the committee and those taking the place of somebody else for your participation. I want you to know that what you're doing is not only influencing what your facility type you represent or the field you represent, is influencing the lives of every child and their families. And this has a huge influence on what happens in their lives. So your participation in this committee is more than just being part of conversations and having fun. It is taking care of the health and safety of children whose lives are going to be influenced by what happened at the facilities they are cared for. So thank you very much. So really quick, the legislative session of this year is over. Thank goodness. Well, the official legislative session, but our legislative work continues to be, we thought we were going to have a week off and then start working on bills, but no, that doesn't happen. So we're working very actively on bills and trying to make sure that we answer to legislators, that we are ready to implement the bills that pass. The bills that pass that are effective the soonest will be May 1st. But just to let people know, we entities have 180 days, and sometimes they give us a little bit more time depending on the work that is required to put in place to make the bills effective. when they say it takes effect on this date, that doesn't mean that the agencies will be ready to implement things, because sometimes it requires changes in the applications, changes in the systems, hiring individuals, coming up with processes. It requires a lot of work on our end to make sure that things are implemented. The law is in place and effective, but our readiness to implement and to come up with the processes sometimes takes a little bit. That said, there are later on the agenda a couple of things that we need to present to this committee. So we're trying to be proactive on one of the bills that influences what childcare does. And so we are proposing a couple of changes in the rules that will help us be prepared to implement some of the requirements from one of the bills that passed this year. So we'll discuss this further as we move through the agenda and we present the rules. So please keep in mind, again, as I start saying, your work and your participation in this committee is very important, because you make decisions about the laws that govern childcare in the state. Not only that, Jody can attest that nationally, other states are looking forward to see what happens in Utah and how Utah approaches what comes our way, so they can either mimic or avoid doing what we're doing. So thank you. That's my report.
Thank you so much, Simone. Okay, Office of Child Care. Carrie usually reports here. Carrie Phillips, I'll turn the time over to you.
Hello, everybody. It's really nice to see you all. I'm happy to be here this morning. I have a few things to report from the Office of Child Care. First, we do have a new assistant director of the Office of Child Care. Her name is Cammy Galt. She's coming to us. She's been a longtime first employee at Department of Workforce Services. She's worked with subsidy a lot. So we're really excited to have that expertise on our team and leading our team. Kind of following up on what Simone said, there was one bill that was passed in the legislature that has gotten a lot of questions for us, which is House Bill 461. Where the legislature passed a bill that childcare workers could have subsidized childcare without regard to income. There was no state funding attached to that bill that says that we would use federal funding. However, right now it's not allowable from our federal funders to be able to do a blanket approval for subsidy. It needs to still be on a case-by-case basis. We are working with our federal partners to see if that can be changed and what can happen. So we're trying to work on that, but it's not going to go into effect on May 1st. So there has to be some hoops that have to be jumped through, and we don't know if it's going to happen or not at this point. So there's an update on that. Also, many of you that are childcare providers probably already know that the stabilization grant payments increased in March. So from March till June, instead of paying at 25% of the original amount, it's now at 50%. So they went up for this last little while. I don't really have any more information on that. I know it will be at the 50% rate until June. So after that, I'm not sure what's going to happen. It may end at that point, which was always the original plan. So other things that are ending, other COVID-funded things, are the professional development scholarships that are paid for with COVID funding. Those are ending on May 31st. So the early education scholarship, college scholarship, the $250 bonus for the professional development incentive. So some of those things will be ending. There's a detailed list on the OCC website that you can see. Also, now CCQS, which we have a couple of things with CCQS we want to let you know about. One is that we are hoping to implement policy on April 1st. Regarding civil money penalties assessed. So right now it's out for public rule comment. So we don't anticipate that anything's going to happen that will stop it. But if a program has a civil money penalty assessed by child care licensing after April 1st, they will no longer be able to get a high quality or high quality plus rating. They can still participate in CCQS. They can still get the other awards, the PD cost sharing, the quality observation award. They can apply for intensive coaching and get that support. They just won't be able to be rated high quality or high quality plus. That's all I have. Do you guys have any questions?
Harry, how long does that stay on their record where they are ineligible for that?
So for our purposes, it's if they have one from the beginning of their 12-month documentation period, so a year. So then.
And so after that, then they could reapply after that year?
Yeah, they could still apply anytime. So they just know, you know, because you can apply to get the support.
Yeah.
But yeah, they can wait. And if it drops off, then yeah, we wouldn't count it if it's more than a year.
Perfect. All right. Any other questions for Carrie? Thank you, Carrie, for your reports.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. With a Utah After School Network, we have Kristen. Kristen, I'll turn the time over to you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm just stepping in for Ben Trentleman today. And there were just a few announcements. So DWS provides this the incentive, and that is open until April 12th. And so if you can apply for those, and that's open to school age providers funded by DWS. And I think that that's about all. We do also do after school awards. And so if you do know of anyone in the field that you feel would merit an award, I would highly encourage you to go to our website and nominate them. That's open to community champions, school day administrators, school day personnel, site coordinators, or center directors, school age teachers, and more, and direct staff. So that's all.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Kristen? Excellent. Thank you so much, Kristen. All right, let's go ahead and go down to our assignments section. And we gave Simone an assignment for the new rules for supervision in homes and centers. So we will go ahead and turn the time over to Simone.
Janice, are you taking care of these or you want me to?
Happy to, I'm fine. Okay, so it probably there's a lot of changes that we're gonna throw your way. And I tried to simplify the announcement by putting together a document that kind of outlines exactly what changes we've, thank you, Kim, she's got it posted, what changes we're proposing. There's some major objectives, and you can see in the green font where the objectives have been noted, right? The biggest reason for opening up the rules at this point was, if you recall, back in December, the Division of Licensing and Background Checks put together an all-encompassing enforcement rule. And this rule is R380600. It's on the administrative rules website, and it's also on our website if you want to look at that rule in its entirety. It's linked in that document as well. We don't need to pull that up now, but essentially what that does is brings all the enforcement content across all the entities that we license into one specific rule. So it doesn't just apply to childcare, it applies to childcare, human services licensing, and healthcare facility licensing. So some of the content has been changed slightly or updated, or it looks a little different. But what we ended up doing then is going into each of the rules for childcare licensing and pulled out any content that is now represented in 380600. So essentially, if you want to look at this document, the first section that in each rule, and I don't know how familiar you guys are with the rules, so please stop me if I'm not explaining well, but each rule has sections represented. Section 2 in every single rule across childcare is definitions and so on, right? So in section 2 definitions section, the only thing we did was add a definition for the Office of Background Processing. And that is because under the Division of Licensing and Background Checks, we have now two offices. We have the Office of Licensing, which manages all the enforcement, manages all the oversight of licensed facilities, and the Office of Background Processing, who manages all the background clearances for childcare facilities, healthcare facilities, and human services facilities. So we did make some changes later that represent OBP responsibilities versus OL responsibilities, and therefore we defined it in the rule. The key that up on the top there says that any stricken content, so I tried to just kind of copy what the changes look like. And if you see brackets and strike through on the font, that means that we're proposing that be removed. And if you see underlined font, that is a proposal for new content, okay? So in section 4, that used to be called license application renewals, changes, and variances. 38600 has that very section that addresses all application changes, when you need to submit a new application, when you need to submit new fees, when you can just submit an application, whatever, if you know what to do if there's a change in your ownership or a change in your director, how to go about doing variances. So that is all now represented in 38600. So we pulled all that content out, and it is stricken in the proposed rule changes. And it's now titled fire and other health inspections, because in that section, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it does say what to do if a local authority doesn't inspect, right? Like there are times where the local authorities say, no, you're just a home. We don't need to come out and inspect. Don't worry about it. If you have that in writing and you don't need an inspection, then this section will apply to you. This section will tell you what your rules are. Let's see, section 5, in section 5, all the stricken content again has been moved. So anything that discusses rule non-compliance, penalties, and agency action reviews, the only thing that is not currently represented and will be in 38600 is immediate closures and the office's authority to order an immediate closure if there is an impending health or safety issue that we need to investigate. So that content has remained, and that whole section has just been retitled immediate closure as opposed to all the other pieces that are now in 600. The second objective is just to reflect the changes required by House Bill 153. Simone or Kim, do you guys want to give just a brief update on that change? I wasn't involved in the legislation, but I can definitely speak to the changes we're making on the rules.
I can. So
sorry, I put you on the spot there.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to take a little longer to talk about HB 153, so before we present the changes. So let me just put a parenthesis on the conversation right here. So HB 153, sorry, I just moved rooms. So let me change this. Okay, good. I'm not being translated. It's just the sun that is coming through my window, okay? So HB 153 made a couple of changes, well, important changes to our childcare licensing processes. So we're, as I said at the beginning, we're trying to present a couple of changes that follow the instructions from HB 153. That is not all the changes that will be required to be able to implement this, because this bill brings more questions than answers to us. So there are some things that we don't have answers for yet. But we are trying to be proactive and be prepared for it. Any change to the rules requires your approval. That's why if we do as much as we can today, then we'll be saving you and saving ourselves time if rules need to be changed. So in general, HB 153 changes several things. It's not all about childcare, but the pieces that affect childcare are, it changes the number of children for which a facility requires a license. Okay, it changed it from 6 to 8. So a person who does childcare and does not want a license, they can care for up to 8 children, unrelated children, and not have a license. Remember that there was another bill last year that also put a cap on the number of children that they can care for. And so that rule is still in place, saying that they can care for up to 8 unrelated children, but up to 10, including their own qualifying children. So there is a cap in there still that didn't change. So unlicensed providers can potentially care for 10 children total. So that's one big change for, and this is only for residential. This is not for center-based facilities. Another change that it made was that it requires everyone that is not required to be licensed, that is caring for children, to have a background check by our OBP, as Janice was explaining, our Office of Background Screening Processing. So we are working on the process of this, and we'll explain that a little bit better. But you know that every childcare provider that requires a background check has to do it through our portal. And so our plan is to require anyone that will be running background checks to have a portal so we can process their background check. To do so, they'll be required to enroll in our system. So we will require them to get enrolled in our system to be able to receive a portal and process their background checks. I hope that is clear to you because you do it every day. So that will be our way to do these background checks. It also requires those who are unlicensed to only have a max of 2 children younger than 3 in their care. So that's something that we will not write a rule for, because we don't write rules for unlicensed care. And what else? Try to not forget some pieces of it, because still we're working through the emotions and trying to understand how much we need to do. And so again, we're coming out with these processes. That's why, and I will explain why we're coming out with these rules in connection to HB 153. So again, for the background, if you go back a little bit, that rule. So we're saying in there that in addition to the requirements in this subsection, every provider will be required to process a background check through our OBP. So that's what we're saying in this rule. And we're saying care for no more than 2 children under the age of 3. That is a requirement for the unlicensed care. Mindy, it seems like you have a question. Unmute yourself first, please.
So that basically sounds like what I can do already as a licensed residential certificate holder. I can have the 8 children. I can have 2 additional school-aged children. But what incentive is it now to be a residential certificate, if you have the exact same, you can have the exact same number of children and not be licensed? What's going to motivate people to want to be licensed?
Okay, I'm going to try to address your question by saying something first.
Okay,
we did not come up with this bill. Okay, it was not our idea. We are just to do what the legislators decide that we need to do. To start with that, right?
Okay.
So, but to answer your question, providers who are not licensed or who do not have at least a residential certificate
cannot participate in the quality process of the state, cannot have any incentives from the state, do not have the right to participate in the quality processes, the grants that are given by the Office of Child Care, and we won't be able to determine quality in those facilities. So in reality, they should not and they could not promote quality or brag about their services in any of the settings that the state has, because the state does not recognize them as properly licensed. The caveat that the legislators came up with to try to promote a little bit of health and safety in those facilities is the background check. But all of us know that a background check is only one piece of the health and safety to really promote and provide quality child care. There is a lot more than just the background checks. And it includes training, it includes technical assistance, it includes supervision, it includes ratios, it includes a variety of things that you licensed providers have in place. So without all that being said, the federal requirements also will not recognize or grant any incentives to providers who are not in compliance with licensing. Another piece that this, I hope I answered your question, Mindy, but to the best way possible, because again, we did not come up with this bill and we...
And I understand that, but I'm just saying, if I was a new person coming into childcare and I didn't have to jump through all the hoops and all the rules and everything, I probably wouldn't get a license. You know, I wouldn't feel like it was worth it to get a license. So how are we going to make it worth it to get a residential certificate?
I don't know yet. As I said at the beginning, we have more questions than answers right now. So we'll continue to support those that want to be residential certified providers, because the bill, and I forgot to say, the bill also say that you, to become a residential certificate provider is kind of a volunteer thing, is not required anymore.
Also, do you know, is a lot of these inspections gonna fall on the food programs to, because I know right now if there's like a relative care or some different types of care that's available, that the food programs are required to regulate them and make sure that they get their training and make sure that they get, have their CPR and their fire extinguishers and all of that. So I'm just curious if that would fall also on the food program.
That's a beautiful question, Mindy. Okay, so please know that those programs that we have enrolled in our system, we call them, oh my gosh, it just flew my mind.
Alternative care.
Thank you, Kim. Yes. Alternative child care providers. The alternative child care providers are providers who are under a different kind of setting. To be able to receive funds from the food program, they are required to have our background checks. In addition to that, they are required to follow the FFN requirements, the family, friend, and neighbor requirements. So the food program conducts their own health and safety inspections following our family, friend, and neighbor requirements. That includes all the requirements that an FFN provider will have.
Yeah.
So, will these
unlicensed residential care, will they be able to apply for the food program?
Anyone can apply. Okay. If they apply, they'll have to be in compliance with the requirements from the food program and the background check from licensing.
Okay.
There is a caveat. The federal requirements for the food program ask that if a person can be licensed, they should be licensed. Okay? And so this group of providers, it is because for any reason, they won't be able to get a license, but they can justify it through getting the alternative care provider. But the federal requirements require that if an individual can be licensed, they should be licensed. Thank you for those questions, Mindy.
You're welcome.
Okay. Okay, so that is the rationale so far for HB 153. Please understand that we don't know all the answers yet because we just have a lot of questions and we're trying to work through the questions. So the first thing is the background check rule. So we're going through the same process for that we go for childcare. So if an individual that is unlicensed that now will have to be in compliance with the background checks, once asked to run their background checks, they'll have to enroll in our system to be able to access the portal and process background checks. It will be the same charge. They'll have to pay for the background checks as any provider will pay, and we'll process them through our system. That's why we're proposing this change to the rule to make sure that we can apply that process. So that's for the background check. Any other rules that are required that you want me to go over, Janice?
No.
Okay.
I think it's, you know, pretty clearly outlined in this document, and hopefully you all received a copy. Are there any other questions on the rule proposals for compliance with House Bill 153 as you read through?
And Janice, that letter B right there, care for no more than two children under the age of three, that is a requirement for the unlicensed providers, but that will not be in our rule. Because that is a statute requirement, but it will not be in our rule because we will not be enforcing this. The only way that we will enforce it is we will go, if we get a complaint, we'll go to the facility and require for them to be in compliance with statute, not with rule, because the rules will not apply to them. And then, I don't know, and then we'll see what we do from there.
So are you proposing then we're striking that B?
Yeah, and I put it in the rules. So when you present the rules, you'll see that B is not in there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, and then, you know, that last bullet point just says that the statute authorizes us to make rules regarding submission to criminal history checks. That is an Office of Background Processing process, and they are currently working on that rule. And as soon as that's in place, we can bring it back here. We have 180 days to get that into place. So we'll let you know when that's drafted.
And let me explain this a little bit more, Janice, as well.
Sure.
So before this bill, we did not have authority to, the department didn't have the authority to run background checks for unlicensed providers. So if they were unlicensed and they were not applying for a license, we could not run a background check. So that's another change from this bill. So in order for us to be able to run their background checks, we will have to have either an MOU like we have with the food program or with DWS to run a background check, or for an individual to be licensed to be able to run a background check. So that's why in this case, OVP, through this bill, receives the authority to run those additional unlicensed providers. And Monica has a question as well.
Okay, so my question is, so I don't know all the other license things as much, and I didn't realize that the friends, family, neighbors could receive subsidy payments. Well, I knew that they could, but I didn't know that they couldn't if they're not licensed. And so I was kind of having a conversation with Holly, and through the chat, and she said that unlicensed providers can still receive subsidy payments. So,
oh, okay, no. Unlicensed providers will not receive subsidy payments. And the FFM program, I'm sorry, I was going to say a name. And Carrie Phillips is here and she can correct me in everything that I say wrong. But the FFM program is another category of care that is approved by DWS that receives the parents, depending on their income, can apply for to receive subsidy payments, but that's a different process. Okay. And it is approved by the federal requirements. So the Family, Friend, and Neighbor is another program that we run, but it is a different process than a licensed provider or an unlicensed provider. So the unlicensed providers cannot receive subsidy payments.
Okay. So then there still is at least one little thing keeping them, encouraging them to be licensed,
Correct.
Even just under that FFN to be able to receive subsidy.
Correct. And okay. With the FFN program, is kind of a step towards licensing, because we have had many FFM providers who start doing the FFM program and discover that they have better benefits becoming licensed. Another incentive to becoming licensed is that the benefits from the Office of Child Care are higher depending on their being licensed or not. So for FFM programs, the benefits will be lower, much lower compared mm-hmm. to licensed providers.
Okay, so it's still, yes, it's still kind of a regulated program. It's just not to the extent of the fully licensed homes and centers.
Correct. FFM programs okay. are legally exempt, but also regulated by us through contract with DWS.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah,
I understood. Okay.
Yes. So again, alternative care providers receive background checks, no subsidies from the Office of Child Care. They don't receive any subsidies, but they receive money from the food program as long as they meet the requirements of the food program. Family-friendly neighbor providers are legally exempt and approved by the Office of Child Care, is a different tier of services, lower, much lower than residential, a lot lower than licensed family, but approved and also regulated. Unlicensed providers will not be regulated. The only regulation will be the background check required by statute. Therefore, since they are not regulated, they're not subsidies or any other grants that they will be allowed to receive.
Simone, yes. I could just add one thing on the family, friend, and neighbor providers. They have to already have a family that they're working with and have a subsidy case. You can't be an FN provider without a subsidy case, without a family on subsidy. If that goes away, then your regulation goes away. And really what we're seeing now, it is just grandma or a neighbor or a friend that's watching those kids in that community. So it is different, and it is substantially lower monthly payment from subsidy. You can see that on our website. You can look at those subsidy rates, which one of the benefits of getting regulated or licensed is to get that higher pay to help and the support that comes with it.
Thank you, Carrie. And if I can add one more thing, this is a very temporary situation. Our family, friend, and neighbors don't last very long. These are temporary services. Matt, you have a question?
Yeah, I guess a brief one. I understand that this authorizes DHHS to make rules for criminal background checks, but is there a way to know? I mean, it essentially has to self-report or be caught in order for those background checks to be run.
That's, again, that's one more of our questions. Who's going to enforce this? Who's going to go after these unlicensed providers? Who's going to tell them you are required to do this? We don't have the manpower right now to do it. Our staff can only handle what we have so far. And the bill did not give us any money to say, okay, we're going to give you some more stuff so you can enforce this. So we're trying to figure that out as well. For now, what we think is that we'll have to go on a complaint base. When someone complains against these providers, we have the authority and the responsibility to address those complaints and check and see.
I'm surprised. I just kind of looked up the language of the actual bill and the sponsors, and I'm surprised that they didn't reach out to at least you guys or this committee for questions. Do we have any idea where this bill originated? Like why this change was thought to be important?
I would say that the childcare community was very involved and worked with this legislator. Our position as the department is to do what the legislators decide. So we have to take our stand, which is yes, sir, yes, mom, and that's what we'll do. But the childcare community was very involved.
I see head shaking from the folks involved there, so I will assume that is accurate. Just for my curiosity, What is the value that the childcare community sees in unregulating that extra two or three kids? Or is there not?
Yeah, I'll let some of the childcare representatives to respond that question.
I'll go ahead and respond. We were very actively involved in this. Our lobbyists were very actively involved in this. And personally, we reached out to our representatives. And so obviously everyone has their voice and can respond and can ask for support. And I know myself personally, I did reach out and I was opposed to this because I feel that safety is so important for children. All I can say is we need to make sure that we are open to the complaints and give people the proper channels to file a complaint if there are complaints. That's what we can do to advocate for this. And I would love to hear Simone give that information. I know how to do it, but I would love for you to give us that information. And then there's also a question in the chat for Carrie, and I'd love for her to be able to answer that as well.
Is that the question about rural communities who have no childcare? Can they still get subsidy?
Correct.
So yeah, basically they use the FFN program. So if there's not a center or a licensed family childcare program in their community, they can find a neighbor or a friend or a family member who is willing to watch their child if that family, that person will get the DWS FFN approval and regulation. And that is what is happening in those communities, you know, because we keep a pretty good track of childcare access and we're trying to get more regulated and licensed childcare everywhere, but it's really hard in some places, but they can get the family, friend, and neighbor.
Thank you, Carrie. And to address your request, Jody, if anyone has a complaint, there are multiple ways to submit a complaint to the Office of Licensing. You can go to our website, childcare.utah.gov, or you can go to our division website, dlbc.utah.gov, and submit a complaint. There are links in there to submit complaints if you want to do it in writing. There are other ways to do it as well. You can call any of our staff. Any of our staff in childcare licensing is able to take in a complaint. You can call us directly. You can email us directly. So we will take complaints in any way you want. You can send it in writing. You can do it through a phone call. You can do it through an email. You can use our websites to submit a complaint. And we'll give those complaints the priority that they have according to our capacity. And so we'll address them as they come. Okay, Janice, thank you. Sorry, but yeah, I know that we're going to continue to have more questions about this bill, but we'll answer questions as we come up with answers ourselves as well.
Yeah, are we ready to move on, or is there more discussion needed on the House bill? We're good.
There's okay. one question that says, has the governor signed the bill?
The bill hasn't been signed yet. But my guess is that it will be signed, but I cannot decide for the governor, okay? But it is part of the governor's budget, one of the bills that belongs to the governor's budget. And of course, it is very likely that it will be signed because it includes also a tax piece that is very important for children. So if it were not signed, then it will take away that tax piece of the bill as well. So my guess is that it will be signed.
But rest assured, the rule filing timeframes are the 1st and the 15th of every month. We will certainly not even push this forward until the bill is actually signed. And if it isn't, then of course, all this content will be pulled back. And then we will push it through for it to be published on either the 1st or the 15th of probably April at this point.
Janice, sorry, you addressed something very important. And as committee members, you need to be aware of these. When we file these, again, granted, the governor signs the bill. When we file these for public comment, my prediction is that some people will complain about this rule, and because of the intent of the bill, that to the childcare community is detrimental in general. But that doesn't have anything to be with the rule, because the rule is for us to be able to implement it. It's not that by putting the rule together, we are in support or against this bill. This is only to be able to implement the bill. So we need to be careful with the comments. If there are negative comments or positive comments, the comments might be about the process and the bill, not about the rule. So we'll bring this up and explain it again to make sure that if we have negative comments or positive comments, that doesn't influence the rulemaking process, because it's not about the rule, it's about the intent of the bill. And that is a conversation to have with legislators now with the Office of License.
Okay, so we're ready to move on real quick. Okay, those were the two objectives we've gone through. Those were the biggies, right? So the cleanup to align with the enforcement piece and the changes in regards to legislation. The next stuff is really kind of cleanup, right? So all the references across all the childcare rules always said the department shall. Now that we're two offices, we really had to delineate what part of the department and what part, which office is responsible for those pieces. So you'll see that stricken content, and it'll either say stricken department, it'll say office. Office is defined in 380-600 as the Office of Licensing under the Division of Licensing and Background Checks. And then if you'll scroll down a little, Kim, the office, when you see OBP, that's referring to the Office of Background Processing, and that is now defined within every single rule of child care licensing. So there's that. In section 9 and 21, there are a couple references to department, and we changed them to provider because it basically says we will interpret or we will allow. These things. So instead of saying the department will allow, we're just saying the provider can do these things. The rest of the cleanup involved with childcare is a term that is defined within the rule. And we found some inconsistencies where throughout the rules, it would say before beginning job duties or before caring for children. We just cleaned that up to say before becoming involved with childcare, because that's a defined term and it standardizes it across all the rules. Let's see, one-off cleanups. Again, there were some places in the rules where it said a supported LIS finding, that's the licensing information system, and that's in regards to background clearances. But LIS supported finding is defined in the child care rules. So we just aligned the terminology to make that more consistent with our definitions. In section 12, there is a reference to emotional abuse. We struck the term abuse and we added mistreatment. Emotional mistreatment is defined in 380-600, and it incorporates abuse. Those statutory references incorporate abuse, so it goes even beyond just abuse as defined in statute. So that's why that was defined as it is, and that again applies across the board for all licensed entities in the division. The substantive changes, let's see. This was at the request of our licensing teams. There's a director designee, so there's training required for directors. There's not necessarily a targeted training for the director designees. Our training genius, Sam Groh, is creating a training for those director designees, and we added that requirement that they attend that training as part of their preparation for covering in the director's absence. What else do we have? Scroll down, Kim, if you would. some changes in Section 5 that oversees background check requirements. Our Office of Background Processing Director Daphne Lynch did already, I think she mentioned, and I don't know if Carrie Hamland is on here. Carrie Hamland is her representative. But I'm told that this was discussed with the committee previously, and we just finally got the rule, the information in into the rule.
And Janice, even if she's not present, I can explain it, but this was presented to the committee previously because we did not include background checks for caregivers that are younger than 18 and fingerprints. But it was explained that it makes sense because the rule already addresses caregivers. So we want to clarify that if they are caregivers, then fingerprints would be part of the process. If they are only household members, that's different. But if they are also caregivers, then we need to include the fingerprints. And this was presented to the committee previously, but if you have any questions, let us know.
Okay, also in background check requirements, we just put a cap on how far back we can look at LIS supported findings of abuse, child abuse. It previously had no time limit, so we were looking back as far as we could. At this point now, 15 years is the standard across all licensed entities, and we just brought that wording into child care rules as well to align with the other entities that we oversee.
Sorry, I'm a good interrupter, Janice, but
you're great. No, I appreciate it.
For the committee, because I'd like to explain some of the rationale as well. We've had some people that in their previous lives, like 40 years ago, they had something with CPS or APS. And 40 years ago, the systems in the state were different than what we are, than what they are right now. And some people had those substantiations, but because of a mistake in the process or in the system. And so there were many complaints and many appeals that we had because of how old the system was and how unfair the system was in the past. So that's another reason why we cap it to 15 years. So if there are the possibilities for an unfair process or a problem in the system, those individuals don't get penalized. And so we only go back 15 years, which is an approximate time in which the systems worked a little better.
And since you're on a roll, Simone, I'm going to let you take the next one on ratios, the 1:7 to 1:8, the rationale on that, because I'm not clear on the mixed groupings.
Thank you. Yes, this was changed a couple of years ago in practice. Let's say about 6-7 years ago with COVID. I don't remember how many years in the past things have happened. But before COVID, I can say that we changed the practice because the ratio for twos was 1:7. But in reality, it didn't make sense because you can have one caregiver with 8 children. That's the ratio for 1:8. So in practice, we've been allowing 1:8, but the rule was not updated. For some reason, we just let the rule go that way. But in practice, we've allowed the 1:8 ratios, which is, again, comparable with the homes. That, you know, in homes, we have the ratio of 1:8 for caregivers. So we just needed to update the rule and reflect the practice.
Okay. In Section 11, supervision and security, we just separated out that that first item and bulleted out the subsections to clearly delineate what a caregiver can do with school-aged children. And the little number 3 interacts in person with the children at least every 15 minutes. That is reflected elsewhere in child care rule. And we added it here just for clarity, but also it is a practice. 15-minute check-ins is a practice across all the licensing entities. Human Services does them as well. So we're aligning again our practices across our licensed entities.
And another interruption, Janice, sorry.
Yep.
This was discussed last time, and some committee members even said, oh, 15 minutes is too long. And some committee members were saying 10 minutes and some other timings. I totally agree. However, remember, child care licensing rules are the foundation, and we want from that point providers to build up. So if you want to do 10 minutes, 5 minutes, or never leave children unsupervised, that's even better. But as Janice said, our practice across all role types is 15 minutes. So we didn't want to go too hard on providers, but let them have better practices, hopefully, and go with a timing that is aligned across all the systems.
Thank you, Simone. Moving down to section 14, emergency preparedness. That was a whole big section and we struck most of the content, but we did add this one piece so that it just says incident reporting has to be done in accordance with our new enforcement rule. And that rule does outline all the, it defines what an incident is and it talks about the requirements for reporting and how to do it and where. Section 17, medications, removes the requirement for child safety caps. This was at the request of our licensing teams because essentially not all medications are liquid and therefore not all medications even have a safety cap. There's a lot of foil packs and whatever. So there is the requirement to keep it in the original or pharmacy container, and that is sufficient because the original pharmacy container generally, if it is a liquid, does have the child safety caps. So at the request of our teams, that has been removed. Section 24, infant and toddler care, changes the check-in interval again from 20 to 15 minutes, just to align with the rest of the content that we are proposing. And then I did put a little small print with with asterisks, just saying that if you see a difference when the rule is actually published, it might be just some semantics or punctuation or you know, whatever. It may be because the legal feedback that we received both from our assistant attorney general and the assistant attorney general for the department, oftentimes as they review the rules and get them ready for filing, they propose changes that we just have to go with because they're our legal advisors. If there's anything significant or substantive, we would bring it back to this committee. But if it's not proposing a change in processes in any way, we'll proceed with the language that they give us. So I just wanted to give that little caveat that if you see a little bit different than what's presented here, that is likely the reasoning. And I think that's all I have for rule changes, just that little bit.
Janice, I have a question on these.
Yeah.
I love this document because we can see it and we get all the information with everything crossed out. I'm not seeing this either on the website or that it was attached to all of our documents in the agenda. Can we get access to this?
They are. So Kim put it together, and I believe if you scroll down, Kim, you can just show them where the rules are.
So, hi, this is Kim. Jody, I sent it along with the agenda to the committee. It's also on our website under handouts. The difference between the committee, you got them individual rules as links. But then I combined them into one document for the website and for the public notice website.
Oh, I don't see them on our handouts from our email.
Yeah, do you see the rule? They should be listed in your email as rules. Should say R430-50, yeah. And they should be links. If you click on them, you'll see the individual rule documents.
Okay,
I see. But I will also share this document with you.
Okay. Yeah. This document is extremely supportive for.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please know that Janice did a great job by putting this document together with everything, which is great. There is a small difference between the rules and this document, and it is the under the two kids under the age of three piece that I mentioned when she was going through it. So you'll see the difference in the rule. So this document is not the rule changes. The rule changes are the other documents that you'll see. This document is just to assist you, to give you an easy access to all the rule changes. Also, remember that our practice has been that we have, for centers, we have 100, which is center rules. We have the 70, which is out of school time. We have the 60, which is hourly. We have the 40, which is preschools. So we have four different rules. Plus we have the 8, which is the exemptions. We have in homes, 90 and 50. And so there is a variety of rules. Any change that we present that is applicable to any one of the rules, we will put it in each one of the rules as well. So remember that for the easiness of going through this process, we might not send you all the rules, because if the rule applies to any rule type, we will also implement it in that rule type. This has been explained every time, but I think that it is not overstressing it, so everyone understands what the process is.
Thank you, Simone. I did intend to bring that up, so I'm really glad you caught that for me. Thank you. And that's all I have.
And Jody, for the processes, so the rest of the committee and those that are replacing members in the committee, the way we do it is that we present all the rule changes, but you have the right to ask any individual questions on any individual rule, because the voting that you will do next will be on all the changes that were proposed, right? So please ask questions or clarification, because when you vote to either support or not support these proposed rule changes, it is on all of the ones that Janice presented, okay? And also, if when you go through it, again, for the organization process, you're not voting on this document that she presented. You are voting or presenting a motion on the rule changes, okay? Not to approve or disapprove. This document is the rule changes.
Okay, so Simone, we gave you the assignment to do with the supervision in homes and centers. And I know that Janice went over it a little bit. I wanted to make sure that that was 100% clear for everyone. And then Matt has a question. So let's turn the time over to Matt first, and then we'll have Simone report on that as well, just to make sure that we're clear on that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hopefully a quick one. I just want to be sure that the question I have is about the timeline for understanding. I don't 100% understand. So that we do a background check, you'll only look 15 years back. And if at the 16 year mark, there was a child abuse issue, you won't see that anymore. Is that accurate?
Okay, so CPS has two lists of different findings. One is severe and the other one is non-severe. So there is a different qualification, right? In the past, the system was different. So yes, if we see something that is outrageous, we have access to all of that. And our OBP, our Office of Background Processing, will bring it up. But we will evaluate what happened. But normally our rule is to go only 15 years in the back, in the past.
So if something egregious happened, you know, even 20 years ago, I'm thinking worst of worst kind of situations, that stuff is still flagged. That person can't get a license or participate.
Keep in mind that the system for CPS works this way. If you did something outrageous in the past, that person will be placed on the child abuse and neglect list. And we have access to it every day. And for a person to be taken out of that list is in Utah is almost impossible. And we access that during the background check process as well. So there is a
double check. For their whole history, not just 15 years.
Correct. So it is, if they are in the abuse registry, it doesn't matter how long ago whatever happened. If they are in the registry, that is an immediate denial as well.
Okay. So the 15 years only dealing with what did you call them? Like minor issues?
It might be a minor issue, yes. But if it is a major issue, normally that those individuals will be placed on the child abuse and neglect registry, in addition to having that finding in the CPS history.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's kind of a double check.
And we do check. But by changing this, we're not going to miss something important for children's safety.
Correct. And please keep in mind that this is not new. We have been doing this in other facility types already, and it is safe. It is the safe way we're doing it. But it is, again, to protect people from unfair processes. But again, if it is something outrageous or something that, even if it is not outrageous, but CPS determined that the individual is required to be placed on the child abuse registry, that is an immediate denial regardless.
Okay, thank you for that explanation.
Thank you. And there is a question on the chat as well. I don't know if it was answered, but I probably misspoke when I was talking about the HB 153 requirement for children under the age of two. The requirement from HB 153 is for unlicensed providers not being able to care for more than two children under the age of three. So if I said it wrong in my words in the past, I'm sorry. But the requirement from the bill is unlicensed providers, those who are not required to be licensed, can only care for up to two children under the age of three, which is different from our licensed providers. Our licensed providers have the ability to care for more depending on their ratio. So they can care up to three, or if they are a center, the ratio is 1:4. So there are different ratios for licensed providers. So this bill does not match our ratio. Go ahead, Mindy.
I think that the rule is under age two, because we can have as many children as we want over the age of two. It's correct. Under age two.
Yeah,
so the rule for unlicensed, they're going to only be able to care for two under the age of three.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and our, again, the bill does not match our ratios. If we could have had a conversation, we could have make it match, but yeah.
Because that's going to be a difficult rule, because my daughter personally has three children under age three, so it would disqualify anybody from watching her children that were unlicensed.
Right, yeah. So it is stricter. And I'm sorry, Jody, you said that I needed to explain something, but my brain is not working today. What was it that I needed to explain?
That's okay. If you could give some more detail for the supervision, active supervision, and the definition from active to regular supervision.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So last time we had a small conversation about supervision, both in homes and centers, and decided that we needed to make the rules better because we are neglecting supervision in both homes and centers. So that's why we changed the supervision rule to say interact in person at least once every 15 minutes. And the reason why is because for homes, you can be, and I know that most of our home providers don't do this, but you can be on a different area of your home, even a different floor, and the children can be the entire day on a different room or different floor of the house and never interact with any caregiver and be considered supervised. So that was kind of a neglectful practice. So we are asking that children be interacting in person with the caregiver at least once every 15 minutes. And for centers, for the school-aged children, the rule was not clear because we say that they have to be able to hear the kids and intervene if needed, but we never said, well, if you leave the school-aged children by themselves somewhere, you don't need to interact with them ever. So we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. Again, I'm not saying that our good providers are not interacting with the kids, but we want to prevent that from happening. We want to make sure that children are not left unsupervised. And so that's why the rule of the 15 minutes. Providers are doing more than that, but we need to set up a threshold, and the threshold was 15 minutes. Does that answer your question, Jody?
Did it answer everyone else's question for that? We just wanted to make sure that everyone's questions was answered there.
I have a question on that. If you have a child that's napping, are you wanting us to wake them up every 15 minutes?
No, there is a rule for napping as well. So especially for infants, You are to check on the children at least once every 15 minutes. So we don't want you to just make sure just to.
Well, check. If I have a school-age child that's not feeling well and is laying down and taking a nap, if the rule says I have to interact with them every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Can it be a check on them or do a.
Correct. We'll explain this in the rule interpretation manual to make sure that you make sure that they are alive.
Okay.
So it's not.
That I'm you have just to saying work. The way that you're writing it sounds like I have to go check on them and interact with them every 15 minutes.
Correct. Yes. But
that's not something. If I had somebody that was asleep, I wouldn't want to wake them up because.
Yeah. So there are two different situations. One is during the day, which is most of our childcare providers, right? And they take naps. So we're not requiring children to be awake, right? But we are asking you to make sure that they are breathing, that they are, that would be the extent of your interaction. Another situation is for providers who care for children during the night hours. And that will be also considered in the interpretation manual, letting you know that the sleeping hours might be increased. And that has been a practice also for feeding children, for example, in centers. We require children to be fed at least once every 3 hours. That is also considered when they are sleeping for longer periods of time. We have a caveat for that, saying that you don't need to wake up children to either change a diaper, to feed them, or to supervise them. Go ahead, Dr. Brickley.
I just wanted to make one quick comment as well, just to make sure it's included in the wording of that independent play of kids with their peers is also, you know, developmentally really important and ideally shouldn't in certain cases shouldn't involve another adult getting involved. So I just wanted to make sure the wording of that includes that somehow. Because I know, you know, making sure that they're alive and breathing and monitoring them is different from, you know, a one-on-one interaction with an adult. So I wasn't sure if the way it's worded allows for that.
Okay, and that is also addressed. That's a good point, Dr. Brickley. Thank you. That is also addressed in another rule where we talk about screening time. So if you look at the other rule that has the screening time, we address that interaction as well. So yes, interaction includes in. It is necessary for children to interact with other children as well.
Yeah.
But in this case, we wanted to address the school-age children because there was only interaction between peers and not interaction with any caregivers sometimes.
Gotcha.
So okay. Yes, school-age children are more independent, right? And of course, we want to allow that. In homes, for example, we allowed home caregivers to let school-age children to play by themselves in the backyard. But sometimes school-age children are there by themselves for long periods of times, and we want to avoid that as well. Janice, I bet she's taking notes left and right to make sure that we explain all these situations in the rule interpretation manual, so we're not going too far or too short on these interpretations. Thank you. Those are wonderful questions. But yes, we will, of course, we promote and allow interactions between peers, between children, which is necessary, developmentally appropriate. But we also encourage and promote interactions with caregivers, which is developmentally appropriate and necessary. In addition, we have in the infant and toddler care section requirements for the provider to interact with the infants as well, which is also a necessary interaction. So it is considered in there. And Mindy, of course, will include the napping times, the diapering times, and the feeding times to make sure that we're not waking up children to supervise them, we're not waking up children to change their diapers, or we're not waking up children to feed them. So we allow them the necessary sleeping time. Great questions, thank you. Mindy, do you have any other questions? Because your hand is still up. Okay, Jody, back to you.
Thank you so much, Simone, for that. Appreciate all the discussion there. Okay, so the new business, it was decided that R430-90 needs to be readdressed to state that the provider and the provider designee needs to be 18 years old or older for the home providers. This will require a rule change. Simone, I'm going to turn the time over to you to discuss this further.
Okay. And that's fine, but do you want, because this is a different rule, do you want to jump to these or to finalize the conversation on the previous proposed rules?
So item number two states for House Bill 153, addressing the number of children for which a license will be required in homes due to the new bill.
Yeah, and we already addressed this in the rules. So the whole set of proposed rules, that's for now what we are proposing. So we will need your vote, either approval or disapproval with the proposed rules before we move on to another item. Okay. But that 153 was explained already through the rules that we proposed.
Okay, so the first one that we would need is we would need a motion to go on with the rulemaking process for what we were just presented with. We would need a motion and second, then we have a discussion.
To approve or not the proposed rule changes that Janice presented and explained.
Okay, so I submit a motion to approve the proposed rule changes that we have reviewed so far.
A second.
And would you please state your name, because the rest of the public, for some reason, some people are not seeing your faces. So if you state your name for the minute purposes and for the public to know as well.
Sorry about that. I, Holly Kingston, propose to approve the proposed rule changes.
And so whomever seconded, would you please state your name as well?
Ariel?
Is it for all of them or just the one?
This is for all the ones that were presented to us. Okay, do we have a second motion?
I can second. Bree Murphy, I second the motion to approve the rules.
Okay, let's open the time up for discussion. Okay, we'll go ahead and have a vote.
And Jody, sorry. Again, the public, some of the members of the public cannot see everyone participating in the meeting for some reason. So in this vote, it will be necessary to state your name and your vote. Sorry.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Simone. Okay. So all in favor of adopting the rules that have been proposed here for the rule updates, all in favor, say aye. Please make sure that you unmute and say your name.
Would you do a roll call? And
yes.
Then,
okay. Oh, I can do the whole roll call. Yeah, I think that would be easier. Let me just pull up my list here. Okay. Standing in for Jamie Bitten is Ariel Baker.
Remember to unmute yourself. You can say
Ariel.
You can say either I or yes.
I or no. Yes.
Ariel Baker, yes.
Standing in for Tammy Thomas is Becca.
Sorry, you can also say nay or no.
Becca Sussman, yes.
Holly Kingston.
Holly Kingston, aye.
Astrid Aris.
Yes.
Mindy Brown.
Mindy Brown, yes.
Bree Murphy.
Bree Murphy, aye.
Alana Brickman, Brickley. Sorry.
It's all good. Alana Brickley, yes.
Matt Wallace.
Matt Wallace, aye.
Monica Gailey.
Monica Gailey, yes.
Marissa Bernards.
Marissa Bernards, aye.
Jody Zabriskie. And mine is nay. I think that we need more discussion before we can vote on this next time. Okay, Simone, the vote has been to go ahead and proceed with the rule updates as proposed that you have placed them in here.
Thank you all. Keep in mind that there is a long process still ahead, right? That includes waiting for the governor to sign off the bill so we can proceed with the 153 changes addressing that bill and going through the department rule process and the public comment. So people still have an opportunity to discuss and to talk about the proposed rule changes. This is not the end of it, but one of the most important steps is to present it to you and to get your approval or disapproval. So thank you.
Thank you, Simone. All right, let's go ahead and proceed on to the R43090. Go ahead, Simone.
Kim, would you present that rule?
Sorry, what am I presenting?
So either the agenda or because... Okay, so remember that last time we came up, we have a rule that for homes, this is a home rule. So in this case, we will require only those representing home providers to vote and those who are neutral, like Matt and Dr. Brickley the childcare expert. Sorry, again, my brain is not working well. But this is related, you all can discuss, but only those that represent this type of rule, which is home, can vote on this one. But it is a simple thing. We have allowed home providers, to have a provider designee, meaning if they are a provider who already has the experience, the skill, and the capacity to grow, they can have a second facility. And so to be able to have that second facility, they have to have a provider designee. And the provider designee will be like that, representing them on the other facility. That is a rule already in place, right? What we did not address is that provider designee has to be at least 18 years old. We don't want a 17-year-old or a 16-year-old or a 12-year-old to be a provider designee. And so we want to make sure that if the provider has a provider designee, that person meets all the requirements, including being an adult. That's what it is. So we want to make sure that piece is clarified in rule, not just in the rule interpretation manual. So the rule that we are proposing is to make the provider designee for homes to be at least 18 years old. That's it. Mindy, go ahead.
Is this for licensed home care, or does this also include residential certificate? I know residential certificate, you can't have employees. Like,
correct.
Correct.
It's only for It's only licensed home providers. And Mindy, even if you are representing residential, you can vote on this as well.
Okay.
Because you represent residential care. So residential care is both residential certificate and licensed. But you are correct. This change will only apply to licensed homes.
And a designee is someone that's physically present in the home during all hours of the day?
That is correct. It's another, is kind of the licensee, same thing, but is not licensed. The licensed individual is the first provider. And again, it's to give provider, this is already in place, is to give home providers who cannot open a center but have the ability to open a secondary facility, again, that have the compliance history, appropriate compliance history, have the experience, the skill, and the capacity to extend. We want to provide more, you know that there is a gap for services in Utah. So this is the way that we are kind of a little bit supporting the ability for providers to open up for more childcare services, but under the supervision of someone that has the experience, the capacity, and the good compliance history to do so. But we miss that important piece that if they're having someone in the secondary facility, that person has to be an adult. Did I answer your questions, Dr. Brickley?
Yep, this rule makes sense to me.
Okay, Monica?
And just to clarify, we have the provider designee for the second location, but that second location can still have a director designee in case they have to be there from open to close.
Okay.
Or, no. I just wanted to make sure there's that distinction that they can still have.
That is correct. Yes. Same thing that happens at the first place and the second place. They don't have to be there 100% of the time. They are the provider, right? But we understand that they'll have to do field trips or school runs or going by milk. And so they can have, and that is in the rule already. If they're leaving, they cannot leave a person who is not an adult with the kids.
Yes. But that provider designee needs to just be there at least half of the time. As per the rules, correct? That say they're open for 12 hours and they just work 9 or 10 of those hours, the designee inside that second location can still take over.
Yeah, the rule says either the provider or the provider designee will have to be there at least half of the time each day they provide services.
Okay. Perfect.
So either one of the two has to be there.
This makes a lot of sense to me. In family child care, a provider age 16 or 17 is not allowed to be alone with the children. So it does make sense to have that provider designee be the age of 18. I'm not sure if we're ready for this, but I am prepared to propose that we approve this rule change as a motion when we're ready.
Is that a motion?
Yes, I'm sorry. I, Holly Kingston, motion to approve this rule, proposed rule change.
Hi, my name is
Aspi
Arias, and I second the motion.
Excellent. Just a reminder for this, the discussion, anyone can participate in the discussion, but the motion and the votes can only come from the residential providers, meaning residential certificate and licensed homes, and for the from the neutral members of the committee who are the licensed expert, I mean the childhood education expert, the doctors, and the architect. So the ones representing center providers won't be able to vote on this motion.
So what we'll do for voting, we'll do the same exact thing for the roll call. I think that's a really great way to go in and vote. So you can vote aye or nay. And because there has been a motion and a second, we'll go ahead and proceed. So I'm going to pull up my list here. Holly Kingston.
Aye.
Astrid Arias.
Yes.
Mindy Brown.
Yes.
Bree Murphy.
Aye.
Alana Brickley.
Yes.
Yeah. Matt Wallace.
Yes.
Monica Gailey.
Yes.
Marissa Bernards.
Yes.
Okay, it's all in favor to go ahead and proceed with the rulemaking process for R43090. Okay, our last item on the agenda is supervision and other needed proposed rule amendments. Simone, I think you hit this, but let's go ahead and discuss it.
Yeah, unless Janice knows better otherwise, if I think that all the proposed rules have been presented.
Yeah.
Janice knows better, so I need her approval to say that everything was presented.
Excellent. Okay. Is there any other comments from the committee members? Go ahead, Mindy.
So are they considering raising the number of children that you can have as a residential certificate?
I'll answer that question. Another thing that residential certificates can do is care for the extra school-age children besides their number, right? Mm-hmm. That is not allowed for unlicensed care.
Okay.
That was part of the bill last year.
Okay.
You will continue to have that option as well as residential and licensed home providers as well, the extra school-age children. With the bill, the residential certificate provider does not have any other way to go further than a children.
Okay.
Because once you hit 9, then you are required to be licensed.
Got it. Okay. I was thinking there needs to be some incentive to keep residential certificate holders licensed.
I know. And again, we've been last time we made the ratios for under 2 the same as for homes to also motivate residential care providers so they could care for more underage 2. And we will continue to support them in any way we can, but the bill did not contemplate that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mindy. Thank you, Simone. Monica.
I'm just wondering if we can put something on the agenda for the next meeting talking about insurance, liability insurance for both home and center providers. It's getting pretty scary out there.
Okay, so we will add an agenda item to discuss insurance and how difficult it is for providers to get insurance to do with licensing rules and findings.
If I may ask, Monica, would you like to be the one presenting that? Because otherwise I need to know what to prepare.
Sure, I would love to.
Okay, so it is not an assignment for me. Kim will put it on the agenda as an assignment for Monica. At least to present the conversation points and so the committee members know what we're discussing.
Perfect. Thank you.
No, thank you.
I think it would be wise to add to this agenda who's going to be presenting the items since we have so many people presenting now. It's not just Simone that's presenting. So if we could add that to the agendas, I think it would be extremely helpful, especially as I'm being the presenter to chair the board.
Thank you. That's a good point. And that will be an assignment for Kim then.
Yes.
Beautiful. And for you and I, because you and I approve the agendas.
Yeah. So. Excellent. Appreciate that.
And since we're addressing the agenda, can I address another topic for next time also for the agenda?
Yes.
So we are required by statute to have an anchor location, meaning a physical room where anyone can come if they don't want to do it online. I can see that 100% of the attendees prefer to do it online, and that's not bad, right? And that's totally okay. That actually stimulates childcare providers to be able to participate because they can take a little bit of time and participate while they are providing childcare services. But statute requires us to have a physical location. Since the Department of Health and Human Services merged, and now we are starting in April, we are required to come. We employees are required to come to the office at least twice a week. Our buildings are going to be very busy with a lot of people. And our conference rooms are being scheduled left and right. And we don't have a lot of offices to schedule for this meeting. So we will put on the agenda, and this is an assignment for Kim as well. We will put on the agenda at the end of the agenda that if anyone is planning on coming to give us a warning so we can plan for it for two reasons: to determine the size of the room that we need to schedule, and also to let security in the building know that people are coming. because the building has a security process in which we have to sign them up and score them in and score them out and the whole thing. So we need to plan for who is coming. So if it is okay for the committee, we will ask you that if you are planning on being in person, that you let us know in advance. So we plan on you coming. I was there by myself today. It was really lonely. So I came back to my office because it was lonely, which again is not a problem, but we would like to be able to plan. And the room that I was in was huge, and some other groups wanted to use it, but we didn't let them use because we had it scheduled for this meeting and they could have used it for their training. I hope that makes sense.
Simone, can I ask a question on this? I think it'd be really supportive to put something on like the childcare licensing website or something where it's like an intake form. Will you be joining us in person? You know, fill out this Google form or something like that, so that it's just a process. The system is set in place so that people know that. Also for submitting agenda items, I think that gets lost, right? People don't understand how to submit agenda items. I think it would be very supportive to place some sort of Google form or whatever form you want to do, where it's, would you like an agenda item added, blah, 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 blah.
And beautiful, beautiful comment. Thank you. That's very smart. And I'll say, Kim has the magic. She'll make it happen. So let's not make an assignment to me, but I'm sorry, Kim, I am your supervisor. So I'm shooting the ball to you, but Kim is really, really good at it and she'll make it happen.
She does an amazing job. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Holly, go ahead.
And I would mention too, I'm guessing that we probably would need to have a deadline on when the last day you could submit that application, and also a last day to submit to attend in person, because I can imagine your conference rooms get scheduled out pretty far in advance. So if we could add a deadline to that, and so that just kind of make sure everyone understands after this date, probably just join by Zoom and maybe wait on your agenda item until the next time.
Excellent. Perfect. Simone, could you please go over the deadline for the agenda so that everyone understands that, so that everyone's clear with that?
Of course. Yeah. By law, we have to post the final agenda no later than 24 hours before the meeting. So we cannot make changes to the agenda in the last 24 hours before the meeting. Jody and I meet at least a week before the meeting to go over the agenda items to make sure that the agenda makes sense and that we have plenty of time to discuss items, because sometimes there are some discussions that might take very long. So by law, again, by the bylaws require Jody and myself to discuss the agenda item. So we will ask you that if you have an emergency item, that you let Jody or myself know, but you take the risk if you submit it too close to the meeting that we will not be able to place it on the agenda. But if it is within the last 24 hours, for sure, we will not be able to do it. Another way to do it is during the meeting, during the public comment, you can say, okay, can we, as Monica did, can we add this item for the next time? That's a good way to do it as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's, history. We've always had basically Simone and the department put things on the agenda. And we've always said, if you want something added to the agenda, make sure that you reach out. But I think this really does put a system in place to where it's very easy for people to submit agenda items. It also, public comment or public can submit agenda items and requests. So Simone, do you have any comments onto that?
No, I think that's a great process. Thank you for the idea. So Kim will make it happen.
Thank you so much, Kim, for being assigned to those responsibilities. We appreciate you.
For being voluntold.
Voluntold. That's awesome. Okay. If there's not any other items or public comment, time for public comment. Do we have any public comment?
We neglected to explain to the public that they are welcome to submit comments. Since they are not set as presenters, they can either raise their hand if they have questions, and then Kim will allow them to participate, or they can use the Q&A tab to send any comments.
So there was a question in here. Someone did ask if they can verbally ask a question. Yes, so to verbally ask a question, that's exactly what you would want to do, is raise your hand, and then Kim would put you in as a panelist, and then you would be able to comment. And then she'd pull you out of the panelist after that. So yes, that is true. The other public comments were about the House Bill 153, and those were all already addressed. Unless we have any other public comment, I'll go on to our next item. Okay, our upcoming meeting is May 9th, and it does start at 9:30. We do it through Zoom, and you've heard the rest of the information. We just need a motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn. This is Matt.
I, Holly Kingston, second the motion.
Okay, and I'm going to go ahead and, if this is okay, to release our meeting, I'll go ahead and have you put your raise your hand on the screen. If anyone says no, then I will go ahead and comment on their name. I'm going to assume that if we have anyone. Excellent. It looks like we're all in favor to adjourn this meeting. So we do not have, Becca. Oh, she can't raise her hand. Can you raise your hand on it? There you go. Excellent. All right, it's unanimous. We can leave this meeting. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.